السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. You are tuning to Youth Talk with me, Bibi Aisha Lahey. And this morning we're talking about effective communication between parents and teachers. Throughout your child's schooling career, there's going to be many teachers that your child will have the honor of being in and in their classroom. And during this time, there's going to be moments where there may be conflict, there's going to be times where there will be disagreements, and there'll also be times when your child will be maybe in trouble for behavioral reasons, maybe learning problems, or for whatever reason. But there's always going to be a time when there's going to have to be communication between teachers and parents, because after all, teachers, parents, and learners need to work together to ensure the success of every child. But also, it won't always be an easy ride. And inshallah, the aim of today's show is to empower parents and teachers to be able to communicate effectively. Even if there's a disagreement, it doesn't mean that it should be a no-win situation. Both parties should be a win-win, because after all, the goal is to ensure that the learner's best interest is what is taken care of first. So we will be having a panel discussion this morning with my guest, Gavin Frank, who is an educational psychologist based in Indonesia, and Abdullah Suji, who is the principal at Roshni Islamic School. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and good morning to my guest. How are you guys doing this morning, Abdullah, Gavin?
Wa alaikum salam. Thank you. I'm doing well and excited to be on this program.
Zakla, always a pleasure having you, Gavin. Thank you so much for making yourself available
to be on Youth Talk. Yeah, and to all your listeners, good morning to all of you. Yeah, it's good to be here again.
Okay, like we said, very, very important that, you know, there has to be open communication between parents and teachers in order to ensure that the learners under their care gain the best of both worlds, and also putting it forward that the learners can obviously achieve to the best of their potential. Okay, that would be the obvious reason, right? Abdullah, why is it so important for teachers and parents to work together? Because at the end of the day, we should always be on the same page. Don't you agree?
Yes, I do agree with you. So let's begin with the paradigm of communication. And I think it can be visualized in the following as a triangle, with the apex, number one, being clarity of communication, number two being the message, and number three the meaning. And within the triangle, you can write the parent. So whatever the parent has to communicate, the clarity of communication must be very clear, so that the message that is received is formulated properly in the eyes and the mind of the child. When I say eyes, I mean the children learn with the eyes and elaborate on that. And thirdly, meaning is interpreted differently. You might intend to say something, but the child interprets it entirely differently. So when the child sees the parent dropping a piece of paper on the ground, for them, it is indication that the parent also breaks rules, because they see litter as something that's not correct. So communication, therefore, begins with the clarity of the communication, meaning that the person, the parent in our case, must be clear as to what they want to get out of the child. Therefore, you know, we've got to take in Covey for a moment, where he says, seek first to understand, then to be understood. So We as parents, as teachers, we first need to understand. We need to seek to understand, and first to understand the nature of society today and how it is affecting the children. And then we'll be able to be those who have understood the situation and will begin to show through effective communication why this is correct and that's not correct. So in essence, we need to look at ourselves and the type of language we use. And I'll just elaborate on this briefly, and our guest can elaborate on it, because from a psychologist's point of view, yes, he will definitely elaborate on it. You see, we are people caught up in language that's so poor. We speak with a vocabulary that is cliched. Our children do not pick up better words from us, because we ourselves are involved in social media and we lack a reading culture. Reading a long message on WhatsApp is not reading. So our children themselves are caught up in the same quagmire of poor communication because they don't read a lot. Because our vocabulary is so poor, because our vocabulary is mixed with slang, with pidgin English, and so many other methods.
Just to interject there. What I was going to say is that, you know, obviously our communication is so important and knowing how to communicate. But I think what we, you know, what we just want to focus on for today is also like getting the message across, across positively, but also ensuring that teachers and parents are on the same page. It's not them and us, like on the same team regarding
the child. Yes, you make such an important observation there, and that's the point I was driving home, in the sense that, you know what, when it's us and the teachers or the teachers and the pupils, whichever one you are communicating with, let's begin with proper language. Let's begin talking good English as an example, or good Afrikaans, or whatever language it might be.
Yes.
Because in good communication, in good language, lies the proper message. So I would begin there, you know, like how we are talking on air. It's a very good language that we're using. The style is appropriate. And you can already see the endorphins are kicking up because it excites the mind when something is of a good quality. So those are my opening remarks. And as the discussion goes, I'm sure we will pick up on some interesting points.
Most definitely. Kevin, would you like to add on?
Yeah, no, thanks, Abdullah, for that. Really, you know, communication is the most important tool in dealing with a lot of issues, with all the issues at school. And just to look at the situation in which we find ourselves. You know, we're living in a society where there's a lot of, I mean, people are on the defense all the time. Parents, teachers, children are all going through a lot of difficulties. You know, there's parents don't feel safe. They feel the need to protect their children all the time. At schools, bullying has been on the increase, and there's a lot of other social problems that take place, including social media. And then teachers also have to face a lot of difficulties in the type of problems and the type of situations they find themselves in. I mean, the newspaper is full of the strange things that learners are doing these days, you know, in terms of violence and discipline has suffered in general. So with this background, you know, sometimes we forget that we're on the same side.
Yes.
And the starting point is that we have parents and teachers and the learners have to know that we're all working toward the same goal. You know, there's often a lot of mistrust, but the starting point is that we are equal partners in trying to help this learner, you know, to grow and develop. And that can't be, you know, we have to emphasize that at all. And our whole approach is has to be that we are equal partners when we start off.
Absolutely. And also, Kevin, it's very important that, you know, when parents are talking about a particular teacher at home, whether they're doing it privately or whether they're doing it in front of their children, but they should always maintain that respect when you're speaking about an educator or educators or even the school. Because sometimes, you know, you hear the saying that children will treat you the way their parents speak about you. So irrespective of maybe the opinion that a parent may have of a particular teacher, always maintain that respect because generally the teacher is taking the role of the parent when the child is in your care. Am I correct?
Yeah, no, definitely. And it does make a difference, the parent's attitude. You know, like, strangely, a lot of the input the parents get about the teachers are from the learners.
Yes.
And often a learner, if the teacher is very strict, they'll go home with stories, oh, this teacher's like this, and oh, he's always picking on me, or this, you know, that kind of thing. And often parents internalize it themselves and start taking sides. But they need to know that there has to be a healthy relationship between the parent and the teacher if they're going to get the best for their child. Being on opposite sides doesn't benefit anybody. Like you spoke about win-win situations.
Yes.
No one wins when you're fighting, you know, when you're at loggerheads about it. And again, parents have to be positive about the school so that the children are more positive about it. And you say, fortunately, you know, it's a minority of parents that are having problems. The majority of parents do actually cooperate quite well. So, but that is important.
Okay. Abdullah, you've also, I mean, being the principal of a school, a combined school, you've often had to play referee when there has been misunderstandings between parents and teachers. Please, can you share with us some of your experiences, like in a sense where I mentioned, irrespective of maybe a parent's opinion of a teacher at that time, the importance of ensuring that your child always has respect for their teachers?
You know, we are dealing in a context of the world where everyone wants to be right. And we are dealing with children who in their own ways want to be right. Respect for law, respect for rules, in the main, are beginning to be challenged by virtue of what we do. If you look at the current looting, the looting that took place in this country, unrealizing of many things, it affected education dramatically. I had a talk show on Channel Islam on this, how it affected education and how it affected the way we deal with law and order. Now you bring that into the situation where a child is wronged and the parent has to listen or take the brunt of the child's action. It's very, very difficult, you know, especially when the parent cannot believe that my child could have done this, whether it's smoking, whether it's whatever it might be. So to give you incidents, I think we'll need a talk show on its own. What I want to say is that you see, when you have these meetings, you got to make the parent understand that the circle of concern for the school is how that one behavior can have a bigger circle of influence outside the classroom, you know. And if we can generate the concern of the child to think that my action has a ripple effect on the other children, then I have to change. Similarly, the child has to see himself or herself as an influencer in the classroom, regardless of whether they're an A student or the B student, you know. So what is it we try to do in the meetings, or at least what I try to do in the meetings with parents, is to make the child understand the power of leadership they have within themselves, even if they are the B candidate in the class. Because we've equated 7 A's to be excellence, but we haven't equated behavior to be excellent, you know. So what I really impress upon in these meetings is to put matters before the child and the parent to say, look, there's one side, there are three sides to the story. My side, your side, and the truth. And between the three, between the three lies the truth, you know. So, you know, I must tell you, when parents begin to see, you know, in the main, they really come down hard on the child, especially when they see that the child has been wrong. But at the same time, you must also know that the willingness of remorse must be from the child or for the teacher who was perhaps behaving in a way that's not congruent to what the teacher should be in the classroom. So it comes down to how we handle the meeting. And when teachers, you know, and just to end up on this point, and when schools make meetings too much of a commonplace with problems, it diminishes the importance of it. So what I then do at the school is introduce a value of the week, which runs for 2 weeks, and you talk about it every day in the assembly. And we ask the teachers then to talk about it in the classrooms, and whether they talk about it for a minute or two, remember, the subconscious picks that up. So the child you might not see the behavioral improvement today, but when the child leaves school and is an adult, those teachings become real for him. So we must teach to the future. We must teach towards, you know, a time when the child will be an adult. And we need to overlook sometimes how the child learns with the value and how to learn with it, because we're all fallible human beings.
After the ad break, we will be discussing on, you know, some valuable tips when a teacher and a parent are having a parent interview or whatever it is that they need to discuss. But, you know, I just received a comment from one of our listeners just saying that, you know, growing up, if we were so afraid to let our parents know that our teachers had an issue with us, or if there was a letter that we needed to give to our parents because maybe there was a misbehavior. Because if you had to go home and say, I did X, Y, and Z at school, you would really be reprimanded. You know, so obviously children were much more afraid of their parents at the time than they were with the teacher. And now, unfortunately, there are instances where, you know, sometimes educators are being attacked without knowing the truth. You know, so it's like going in to meet that parent, going in to meet the teacher with, like you say, like Devin mentioned, like you were really on the defensive. So, Kevin, if you just want to talk a little bit about that before we go into the ad break.
Yeah, look, I like what Abdullah said about, you know, being, when the school is positive and open about the main focus of the meeting, you know, because it's not really a power thing.
Yes.
It's really about how to solve the problem, and it's important to stay focused on getting the problem solved rather than being caught up by the emotion. Because sometimes it becomes an issue of personalities. The person, you know, you're attacking the person's personality, either from the parent side or the teacher side or in terms of the learner. And if you focus less on the personality and more on the issue itself, it does tend to make a difference. So that, you know, the people don't feel personally, insulted in any way. They're looking at the action that took place that was negative and what can be done to solve it. But again, try not to get caught up in all the emotions that can, it can endanger, you know.
Definitely, definitely. And also, the very, very important, which we'll be talking about more after the break, is as much as we say, you know, parents should be showing respect to teachers, teachers should also be showing respect to parents. I mean, you're dealing with a person who, for them, their child is their world. So obviously using sensitivity, using empathy, and also being understanding. But we will comment about that more after the ad break. Don't go away. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. We're back on to Youth Talk with me, Bibi Aisha Lahir. And this morning, we're talking about effective communication between parents and teachers with my guest, Devin Frank, who is a psychologist, as well as Abdullah Soji, who is the principal at Roshni Islamic School. Now, just before the ad break, we spoke about mutual respect and the importance of mutual respect, and obviously making it very clear to learners, to educators, and to parents that we are and we should always be on the same page, and that is looking to work together for the best interest of the child. Now, just you know, some advice on how educators and parents should conduct themselves when they have a parent meeting. Now, when I'm talking about a parent meeting here, I mean if an educator may have picked up that there is some learning challenge that he or she may be facing with a learner, or there's a behavioral issue. When a parent gets a notification that they need to visit the school, obviously they're going to be a bit nervous, they're going to be a bit apprehensive, they're going to ask their child what's wrong, what's going on. So, Devin, if you could please advise our listeners on how should such a meeting take place. Obviously, we say respect is very, very important, showing empathy, showing sensitivity, but also being honest and being transparent. Do you agree?
Yeah, no, definitely. Look, while the meeting is a specific occasion to get together and deal with an issue, but the culture of the school needs to be one of transparency, like you mentioned. And, you know, respect is an ongoing thing. And the whole issue of including parents and making them feel that they are partners is an ongoing thing. It's not specific to that meeting. Yes. So that when parents come today, to some extent they do feel reassured. But of course, when there's an issue to face, they will be a bit nervous and probably defensive as well. But again, like getting parents, you know, that respect issue at all times, treating them well, including them in the information that's taking place at school and so forth. So it builds up a good relationship. And, you know, when we have to deal with issues like this, at least there's a basis of trust to start off with.
Yes, yes. And also, I would think that obviously honesty and being transparent is important. You know, obviously if an educator has picked up that a child may have some challenge with learning, the evidence is obviously in the child's work. The evidence is all obviously in the intervention strategies that the teacher has tried to implement to make sure the child is coping. Likewise, if there is something from home, then parents should let the school know or let the teacher know, so the teacher knows in, you know, which way he or she going forward will be able to deal with the learner.
Yeah, no, sure. And for an example, like on Parents' Day, I mean, parents come there and there's usually a long queue of parents waiting to meet the teacher. And it's just teachers, well, most of them are quite, careful. But it's just important that if you're dealing with a learner that has a problem, that there is some confidentiality, that it's not something that you're going to talk while there are other parents, you know, listening. Because immediately parents start feeling, you know, as though they've been singled out and so forth. It's just about handling it in different ways so that you show the parent respect at all times.
Definitely. Abdullah, would you like to add on, please? You know, just for both sides, for parents as well as for teachers, when they have a meeting where they need to discuss maybe a learner's behavior, or maybe there could be like a learning challenge that may have arisen. What do you say? What would you advise?
Over the years, I've come to realize that parents want to be given the concrete reinforcement that the child will be successful in life.
Yes.
Regardless of what the problems are, whether they are socio-economic problems or academic problems, but the child also wants to believe that he can make it in a world where challenges are increasing. So in the main, what we do in the school is open the meeting with the understanding that this meeting is aimed to benefit the child in a changing world, in a changing environment, because the school is a silo, you know, while the world outside the classroom has different dynamics. And if the child is not prepared to take on challenges, then how are they going to make it beyond this? So that is the opening point, to make the parent understand that the child is going to be a role player outside the domains of the classroom. And this really makes sense to the parent, because outside the classroom, when the child is 19 and 20 years old, there's no mommy and daddy in the workspace, and there's no mommy and daddy at university. So what we try to do in meetings is to show what are consequences. How did a smoking incident manifest itself, and what are the consequences of it? What I see as a major problem in schools today is that parents do not teach the child to take responsibility for the actions. And this creates a very serious problem in the growth, in the intellectual growth of the child, in the maturity of the child. Therefore, the child doesn't believe there are consequences. So once the disciplinary action comes into place, especially in high school where we have DC hearings and the like, it is all aimed at making parents understand that there are consequences for the child as well. And when the parent begins to shield the child from consequences, that is when we talk to the parent without the child to say, look, you have to understand that the child has done something wrong. Make them understand the consequences of what a wrong action is. And this is a very difficult point, you know. So it's not easy, given the fact that parents do not believe in many things we have to tell them. And what we find, Vivaisha, is that when children in the high school write out their statements in an office, for example, about what they did, when they write it out, you'll see that they fail to articulate, or they find it very difficult. They have a difficulty in articulating their own issues, and then they realize they cannot communicate even to themselves what they did wrong.
It's amazing.
It's so tragic. You read a statement of a grade 12 child, and the pronoun I is written in lowercase, and the school is written in lowercase, and the words go beyond the line. And you wonder now, who are you talking to? And that is when you find that communication then has to go down to a very basic level. And then you've got to level up the conversation so that you can have the DC hearing, which is very formal. So I always tell the parents, let's start with the basics. Do you understand what the matter is? Do you understand that there are consequences and it's beyond the domains of the school if the department is to step in for a suspension or an expulsion? So we have to make the parents aware of the brutal realities also. Finally, there are also positive meetings which we have with parents, especially those children who have done something great, who have done something good, who are top achievers. And we meet with those parents, and those meetings go off so well because the mind is different, the feeling is different, and the atmosphere is different. So we got to balance our meetings as well by having to give the parents something positive about what has happened as well.
Okay, so Abdullah, I'm going to ask you this question now.
Yeah.
From an educator's perspective, and then I'm going to ask Gavin from a parent's perspective. Now, say as an educator or maybe a team of educators, and you're dealing with a specific learner and you pick up that there could be a serious learning problem. Now, remember, as educators, you would know this better than anyone being a principal. We are not allowed to diagnose. We can say that we think something may not be right and further evaluation is required, but we're not allowed to diagnose. But breaking the news to any parents saying that I think there could be a learning difficulty is always very challenging. And obviously telling a parent that there could be denial, the parent can be, it's difficult. It's difficult to let any parent know something like that about their child. What would you advise our listeners that are educators? How should they approach such a situation?
You know, that's such an important situation, and the context is very important. I always tell parents when we have these type of meetings that your child displays some barriers to learning and there's probably a need for intervention beyond what the school can give. And the school still has the best interest in the child. Mind you, parents are very appreciative of such comments because they know you've been honest. Rather than telling the child in front of the parent, your child is always failing. And barriers to learning, you know, and learning disabilities and learning problems, as we do know, are educational psychologists' domain. I did remedial education as well, and I realized that yes, this information comes across differently when you talk about it in the office. But the parents do appreciate it because they realize that you know what, there is something wrong. However, those parents who fail to realize it, who want to live their dreams through their children, begin to see it as something, as a figment of the imagination, you know. And you've got to have continuous meetings with them, you know, and your meetings with them must be very informative. You must have the correct data. You must have the exam scripts in front of the parent and show them through the basics of what happened in the classroom, the child is not coping or the child is having difficulty in communicating. For example, you'll ask a child, you show a script to the parent and say, but why does the letters always go below the line? And the child is in grade 10. Surely there's a problem with the eyes. Is the child dyslexic or myopic or whatever it is? And sometimes it's just a matter of the child needing a pair of glasses.
Yes.
I remember an incident, a child needed hearing aids because that was the problem. And the parent thought, my child is not learning, but when you put the hearing aids on, the child listens to everything in the classroom, and suddenly there's an upsurge in the marks, not 100%, but there's a change. Yeah. And then you have physical conditions as a result of how we're growing up. You know, and don't forget the effect of the cell phones and the blue screen addiction, which in themselves has its own wake of problems. So these meetings are sensitive, and I think when you call the parents for such a meeting at the outset, tell them this meeting is academic as well as bordering on issues that we think your child is having with regards to the holistic learning environment or the holistic learning of the child in a school. And they're appreciative of it. I think we tend to forget that. However, what parents are afraid of is the expenses that goes with taking the child for remedial education or intervention.
And I would think also that, you know, obviously no one would want their child to be labeled, obviously. Nobody would like that. Gavin, from your perspective, you know, from a parent perspective, I mean, a parent goes and visits school. Sometimes if there could be, like I said, a suspected problem, you know, parents would react differently. You could get a parent who would be in denial. You could get a parent who would be appreciative. You could get a parent who is in total shock. And parents react differently, but ultimately, you know, there is acceptance later. So what would your advice be to a parent? I would obviously think that, you know, for parents to be honest in the beginning to say that, you know, I picked up this with my child. What do you think? Do you think that works?
Yeah, no, sure. Look, parents, there are so many different types from so many different backgrounds. But the important thing is that they need to go there with the intention of how can I best help my child. And, you know, it's about enlisting the aid of the teacher. Go there with an open mind. Get clarity, first of all, about what is the issue. Because sometimes you hear the child's version, and it might be totally different from what the teacher, or there'll be lots of facts left out. So you go in there for clarity, and you go in there for direction. Very often, parents need support. You know, and sometimes, even in cases where children are misbehaving, there may be parents that can't handle the situation themselves. So the, you know, so they go in there, and again, depending on their needs, whether they're going to go there positively, that's the other thing, because, you know, from a school point of view, there's still a protocol and a policy, and, you know, people work together, this is how we're going to approach it. Parents come from all different backgrounds, different situations, they're under a lot of pressure. But again, the school would help in letting them know that they're there to support them. And like Abdullah was saying, you know, there's a number of ways in which the teachers can be very open to the parents and make them understand that it's for the child's good.
Absolutely. You know, I have a comment from one of our listeners that's just mentioning also that, you know, how, what advice would you give, the panel would share, when a teacher needs to approach a when a parent needs to approach a difficult teacher, and this person puts the comment, you know, the word difficult in inverted commas. So what would be your advice regarding that? Abdullah, I'm going to ask you first, and then Gavin, you can add on.
Just the last part again, please. It wasn't clear for me.
How can a parent approach a difficult teacher? And they got the word difficult in inverted commas here. So I'm assuming that maybe the parent and the teacher may have had an altercation before or something. So what to do?
You know,
handling conflict.
Yeah. You know, in this book, and she talks.
I think we're having a bit of a problem, Abdullah. We cannot hear you so well.
Okay, can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
Perfectly.
Yeah, so Lee Kenter, in the book Parents on Your Side, talks about that specifically, you know. And the emphasis there is to make the meeting take place in a different setting, not necessarily in the principal's office, because that has an intimidating atmosphere. So probably the first meeting between such and such a parent and pupil, I mean, and teacher, can take place out in the school foyer, which is fairly public. So both will have to be very polite to each other and have decorum in behavior, or in the you know, in the field of the school, whether it's the dining hall or whether it's the school playground. So the parent and the pupil begin the meeting in a different setting. That changes things. So you begin to break up the inhibitions that one would have of the other. And the other point is to talk to the teacher beforehand. That is the principal. You say, look, we know there's some issues between you. Why don't we settle those scores first? And maybe there are stereotypes or generalization that came about as a result of a misunderstanding. So these points, Lee Kenter points out, it's necessary to bring up. And we tend to forget this, you know, because if I can just mention very quickly, because what you're saying is so important, you know, she talks about having an effective attitude, you know. Effective teachers know they must have the support of parents. So that is how, as a principal, you begin to talk to the parent, to the teacher, to say, look, we know you're an effective teacher. Now, it has greater effect if your relationship with the parent is, you know, escalated or leveraged to a point of beneficence, and I'm using the word correctly, their beneficence, because we tend to forget a beneficial relationship is conducive for the child's growth, you know. And as parents and as teachers, you know, we grow up with a lot of stereotypes and we go on hearsay with our high keys as to what that teacher is and what that teacher is. We have a gossip column as well. Those gossip columns and agony.
Yes,
it's not good. We grow up with gossip and we teach our children. We teach our children that gossip is actually the right medium to differentiate a person's character or make friends in that way. So difficult teachers, really, I think if you really scratch the surface, they're very humble human beings. It's just that the pressure on the teachers now have become so tremendous that the stress levels have made them very weary. You know, teachers are suffering COVID. I mean, they are suffering caution fatigue. They are suffering caution fatigue in this COVID situation. So I say make the way and be the better person. And please, Allah and His Prophet, when you meet the parent and you see the difference.
I mean, unfortunately, we're going to be, you know, ending the show in the next 2 or 3 minutes. Gavin, quick question I'm going to ask you. I actually wanted you to comment on what Abdullah said, but I'm going to actually just ask you another question quickly, and then we're going to unfortunately have to round off the show. You know, lots of positive feedback coming up, but also, Gavin, I think it's very important, like, you know, like Abdullah mentioned, that, you know, for parents to also understand that it's challenging on the teacher side as well. Also, to have realistic expectations from teachers. Teachers also need to have realistic expectations from parents. Parents, like if you call a parent, like, I need to see you tomorrow, no matter what, it can't always be possible. Parents are also working. They can't just take off from work. Also, maybe they're working long hours. It can be a little bit challenging for certain projects to be done on a particular time. So maybe the parent notifying the school that, you know, I have a bit of a challenge, but I have a bit of assistance. Nothing wrong with that. Realistic expectations on both parties?
Yeah, no, that's important. And also, this, you know, like remembering that we have a common humanity, that teachers have problems, we have problems. And when you're approaching a school and approaching the teacher, even if it's a difficult teacher, to go there with the thought that how am I best going to get this teacher to work with me? And if you follow the protocol or the, you know, the way, contact the principal first and go through the principal, meet the teacher, so that there is some control, things normally turn out quite positive in the end. But again, try not to get caught up with the emotions of it all. Stick to the issues, and a lot can be done in that way.
And I think we can obviously end off in saying respect is very, very important. Open communication, be transparent. Like you said, at the end of the day, we're all on the same page.
That's right.
Very, very important. In a few seconds, Gavin, your final words of advice to our listeners.
Yeah, look, the one thing I need to say is that schools should do on a continuous basis more to let parents know that they are partners, that they're not enemies. You're not on opposite sides, you know what I mean? Yeah. And there's different creative ways that schools can find. It sounds like, Roshni, there's a lot of positive things happening there at the moment.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you know schools could learn from that. And again, don't personalize. Look at the issues rather than the people or the person. Because in the end, it's what is best for the child. We all want to make a difference in that child's life. And teachers don't go out of their way to pick on children. They'd be thrilled if every child could succeed in the class, generally. Occasionally, you do find a teacher who may have problems themselves. But, I mean, fortunately, that's in the minority, or we hope it's in the minority.
Yeah.
But definitely a lot can be done in this. Especially at this time, it's important to review what we're doing. Thanks, Vivi.
Definitely. Thank you so much, Gavin. And Abdullah, quickly, your last final words of advice to our listeners before we round off the show.
Thank you very much. My advice is the following. Keep a positive mind. Know that there are always two sides to the story, and humility always brings the best result out. And if we show the children that they are the future parents, then they themselves begin to have a mature mind. And that is the way I look at it. Thank you very much for a great show.
Thank you so much, Abdullah Suji and Gavin Singh, for your valuable advice to our beloved listeners. Please remember us in your duas, and on behalf of myself and my sound engineer Ziad, wish you a good week ahead, and inshallah we will be chatting again next week. Jazakallah khairan. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.